This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello, welcome to episode 8 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. This is the only dedicated Dreamcast podcast anywhere on the internet. And, you know, we're proud of that. My name is Tom. Joining me is Rob.
Hey.
And Gaz.
Good evening.
And then from across the pond, as ever, our two American co-hosts, we have Caleb.
Hello.
And we also have Xander, a.k.a. B-Sharp Major General.
Hello.
Hello. Gentlemen, we always start in the same way. I'm going to ask you what you've been playing and if you've been playing anything on the Dreamcast. Xander, what have you been playing?
Well, actually, I was on a vacation the whole last week, so I didn't have my Dreamcast with me.
So you didn't take your Dreamcast in the luggage?
that would have been too much stress.
Amateur.
where did you go? Anywhere nice?
It was Michigan, Detroit.
I'm not familiar. Area. I'm not in myself, but I hear good things.
It's pretty nice.
Mainly from Eminem. Yeah, mainly from Eminem songs, to be honest. But cool. Did you play anything at all? Any games? Not the Dreamcast stuff? Or
I found a random Steam game called DLC Quest, mm-hmm. And it's pretty short, but it's cute.
Oh, that's the one where you have to unlock to jump and unlock to turn left, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It kind of takes the mickey out of having to purchase loads and loads of DLC with games.
All right, yes. Yeah.
It's kind of an 8-bit side-scroller as well. It's kind of cool. I played it on the Xbox.
Yeah, in this world of DLC-heavy games, that sounds like quite a nice...
I think the premise of the game, you collect coins and then you have to buy the other actions, like to jump and to turn left and things like that. So yeah, but it's cool.
It sounds familiar, actually. Yeah, it sounds familiar. Yeah. Cool. Cheers, Caleb. Xander, sorry. Caleb, what have you been playing?
I've been messing around with my VMUs. I've been kind of looking through my collection of VMUs, seeing what doubles that I have. And even though they're all, like, I don't think I've ever bought a VMU new, they're all still in working condition. So I've been messing around with those. And I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my third arcade stick, which I believe needs some cleaning. And I got to take it apart somehow. And that's a little bit more difficult than some hardware that I've dealt with before. So I got to look it up online, see if I can get some instructions on that. So yeah, I've been mainly dealing with, you know, like fighters and stuff like that as I've been messing around with all my hardware and my Dreamcast.
Yeah, I quite like the arcade stick, the Dreamcast arcade stick. It's a really sort of solid piece of hardware. It's really really nice. You've got quite a nice modded one, haven't you, Rob?
Yeah, I really like it, and I like it even more now modded. I just switched out the stick and the buttons because in the original it has a nice stick, but it's just got a square gate on it. And the buttons are okay, but I switched them out for some Micro Switch Sanwar buttons, and I got a new Sanwar stick and stuck an octagonal gate underneath it. And I changed the color scheme as well, because obviously it just comes in the what I consider the garish green of the original.
So quick question, with the micro switches, I know the stick is micro switches, of course. You can hear a little clicking of all micro switches. So are the original buttons not really like high quality micro switches, or?
I don't think, they're either not micro switched, or if they are, they're not very good quality. Everything I read up on them when I was going to do this mod said that you should switch the buttons out. The problem is, and I was talking to Tom about this earlier, the sticks are a pretty simple replacement. You can literally take the old one out and order a new one from Sanwar, and basically it's just a direct swap. The problem with the buttons is that the buttons that Sega for some reason, shipped with it are millimeter fractions too smaller than sort of standard sized arcade buttons. So if you then go, I want to buy some new Sanwa or any other brand buttons and try and stick them in, they're slightly too big in diameter for the holes, essentially, through the metal sheet on top of the joystick and then underneath the plastic. So if you want to get them in, you have to either Dremel or file out a little bit of the holes to make the diameter bigger so they'll fit.
That's dedication, that, yeah.
I'm making it sound harder than it is. It isn't. It's just a pain. You've got to spend 20 minutes, half an hour with a file just manually filing it out a little bit, and then you can slot them straight in. And with me, I did no on my mod for the arcade stick for the Dreamcast, I didn't do a single bit of soldering. I just used crocodile clips and tin foil, literally, to make new connections. And I did that. I've had that for over a year now, and it's worked flawlessly. So it's certainly a very doable mod, even if you're not specifically sort of a real technical guy.
I must say as well, I've seen it in the flesh, this particular stick of Rob's, and it is a really good looking piece of kit.
That sounded so wrong.
So wrong, but so right.
I'll just say on that note, I don't know about the US, but in the UK, it's a bit of a plug, but I get all my parts for these sort of modifications from Arcade World. They're really, really good. Check them out.
Are they sending you a check?
It's in the mail.
It's already banked.
Cool. Gaz, what have you been playing?
Nothing on the Dreamcast. I did have the intention of digging out Resident Evil 2, which is my favourite Resident Evil game. But then with work and real world stuff, I haven't been playing much. I've only been playing Formula 1 on the Xbox. I've been hammering that recently. But I did buy another Dreamcast Resident Evil game. I bought Code Veronica. Do you know the one that's in the red plastic sleeve?
You mentioned that in the last podcast, yeah.
Yeah. I bought the complete version.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't even know existed. It costs slightly more as well, so I don't know.
Wow, you're going for the full completest set now.
The complete version of Code Veronica on the Dreamcast, so that's winging its way from Japan as we speak, so hopefully that'll be with me soon.
I love the Phoenix art on that, where it's like the art for the jacket that Claire's wearing. That's just so, it's so good looking, it's awesome.
It's just a great series of games, full stop.
Yeah. Well, up until number 6. Well, that's a different story.
The same can be argued with Final Fantasy, though. Up to a certain point, the games stop getting good, but definitely 2, I think, is the pinnacle of the series.
A little bit off topic, but are you holding your breath now that they've had some success with the release of the remake? Do you think they're finally going to do one for 2?
Because they re-released Resident Evil, didn't they, recently on the Xbox One and 360, wasn't it, on the PS4 as well, all the new consoles, but possibly, because it's a fantastic game. And haven't they just announced a re-release as well of Final Fantasy VII, which is arguably the best Final Fantasy game, so...
Well, it's interesting because I think they're going to re-release 0 now, and it's like, boy, that's already been re-released a number of times.
Well, yeah, that was on. They released that on the Wii as an archive, didn't they? And again, Resident Evil, the first one, so to speak, that was released on the GameCube and the Wii and numerous other releases as well, digitally on the 360 as well. So,
I'm hoping. There's always hope for 2 being remade.
Yeah, that would be cool with all new artwork and stuff.
Do you genuinely think that that's like the best that you can hope for now with the Resident Evil franchise, that they remake 2? Or do you genuinely think they can make another good Resident Evil game?
Well, they did the Resident Evil... crud. And now the name just escapes me. It's the 2 that just released. It's basically the remake of the DS game.
Revelations.
Revelations. And then they made Revelations 2, which was also quite good. But it just seems like they were focused more on the success of the re-release of the remake.
Yeah, and they kind of changed as well. I mean, Operation Raccoon City kind of went from like an action to like a first-person shooter, completely ruined it for in all intents and purposes, but we have to get back to the, I don't know, it's over-the-shoulder shooter, and that's what it should be, shouldn't it, really?
Gears of Evil.
I thought 4 Last thing, Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube was absolutely stunning. It looked brilliant. It played brilliantly. It was a great game.
It was a great game. Can we wrestle this back onto the Dreamcast, though? Is that right?
Anyway, yeah.
Rob, what have you been playing?
Yes, I have been playing on the Dreamcast. I got Shikigami no Shiro 2, I was talking about on the last one. And Caleb, you were right. It is the one with the character who throws cards.
Yeah.
It's got loads of characters, but yeah, one of them throws cards.
Doesn't one of the that like moonwalk away from the bullets too? Or something
yeah,
like
that's
that?
Right. It looks just like a moonwalk. Yeah, they move. It's got a really unique system, Shikigami no Shiro, that
now that's a smooth game, right? It's like it's a good shooter.
Oh,
right?
totally. I mean, yeah, I've had it for about a week, and what I've played, I've just it's great. I can't believe that I hadn't heard about it or played it before this week. But one of the feature that I like the most is they've got a system. It's called like bullet graze, which I actually hadn't come across before. Where if you can maneuver your character, so you literally skim. The hitbox around your character literally skims that of the incoming, you know, the missiles and the incoming shots from the enemies, then it powers you up. So it's sort of like a risk-reward system that's very nice, because normally in shooters you're like, I need to get away from anything. You know, you're dodging through all the different rounds and you want to stay as far away as possible from the ammunition that's coming to get you. In this, it's sort of like, well, you could...
Testing you to play a little bit crazy, exactly. And a little bit on the edge.
Yeah, that's it. It's that on the edge. That's it, guys. Absolutely hit the nail on the head. Like, it's always like it rewards you to play on the edge, and I'm finding it really, really good so far.
Doesn't that come with a music CD as well?
Yeah. I got the special edition. Yeah, which is very nice. It's two discs and a cardboard sleeve, and it's got the soundtrack on one, which I really love. You know, it's really. Upbeat sort of techno electronica, which I always feel works really well with shmups. Yeah, and then it's just the game on the other one. But yeah, vertical scrolling shooter, and I'm just loving it. And the only other thing on the Dreamcast, because I missed our Shenmue podcast midweek, I of course have restarted Shenmue because of the news. So that's what I've been playing this week.
Cool, good collection there of Dreamcast oddities. Well, not so much Shenmue, but the other one, definitely. Yeah, I'm the same. I've not really been playing much on the Dreamcast. The only thing I have been playing is Marvel vs. Capcom 2. This is probably my favourite 2D fighter on the Dreamcast, just because it's so easy to pick up and play, and I'm generally quite rubbish at 2D fighters, as we found when I visited Rob quite recently, and we played quite a few of the Neo Geo games, and I just got my ass handed to me constantly, not just by the CPU, but also by Rob himself. So thanks for that, Rob.
No problem.
Away from the Dreamcast, I've been playing quite Far Cry 4 on the PS4, which is just a phenomenal game, and also a game.
Is it good? Because I played Far Cry 3 and I thought that was just an amazing game. I mean, umming and ahhing about getting Far Cry 4.
Honestly, it's Far Cry 3 and then the same game again on top of it. It's just absolutely stunning. It's more of the same, but it's phenomenal. It's brilliant. You know, you can. What I love about the PS4 version is you can just kind of pause the game, like turn the machine off, and then you can turn it back on again, and then just jump straight back into the game within seconds and be back where again. I think you can do that on the Xbox One anyway, can you? The pause game feature, yeah.
Yeah,
but it was only recently brought in on the PS4 in an update. So that's quite nice. Sticking with the Sony hardware, I've been playing on a game called Prinny, or rather Prinny 2, which is a 2D side-scrolling beat-em-up, which is an offshoot of Disgaea universe, where you play as these little characters called Prinnies, which are little penguin things. That's quite cool. It's got a lot of humour in it, and it's just really, really fun. And going back to the Dreamcast again, I have been playing on the Dreamcast Collection on the 360, which I actually bought very recently. And it was more out of curiosity than anything, because it does have Space Channel 5 Part 2 on it, which I've not actually played on the Dreamcast.
It's also, hasn't it got Crazy Taxi?
Space Channel 5 Part 2, you've got Sonic Adventure and Sega Back Fishing. And I just wanted to, it was really just out of curiosity. I wanted to see what the difference was. I was expecting this big kind of, like, you are playing Dreamcast games on your Xbox 360 when I turned it on, but it's so basic. It just comes on, and it's just like a really, like, bland menu screen where you just choose the games via a little icon, and that, you know, it goes into the game itself, and you can tell it's like a really shoddy like emulation, because it's the sound is really muffled, and especially in Crazy Taxi, like the music's different, obviously due to like licensing. As far as the way the game plays, for example, Crazy Taxi, a lot of people have said it's a really bad port, but I can't actually see anything that bad with it. Maybe that's just me, but it plays fine. I think people just like to knock stuff like that, but I found it perfectly serviceable, to be honest. So yes, that's what I've been playing in the last couple of weeks since our last episode. Anyway, shall we jump into our first segment, gentlemen? Let's do it then. Okay. Very recently, a total of 3 new Dreamcast games have been announced. Well, not announced, but, you know, hinted at. Mainly through... Yeah. The first one is called Zen... I don't know how you pronounce this. I think it's Xenosider from Retrosumus, who did an interview with us on the main Dreamcast Junkyard website a couple of weeks back. And it's basically an homage to Space Harrier or Sin and Punishment. It's an into-the-screen run-and-gun shooter. You can sort of run on the ground, or you can take off and, you know, fly. They've not really released a lot of details about it just yet. I mean, you can find the interview on the Dreamcast Junkyard Insight. I just wondered if any of you guys had seen screens of this and what you thought of it.
Well, I've seen the images that were put up with the piece on the yard, and yeah, it does. It looks like Space Harrier.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's never been my favourite genre. There's always something about the perspective that shook me in terms of like accurately hitting the things coming towards
you. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know if it's just how my eyes see the screen or something.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, totally. To be honest, I think it's probably a bit too early to really say or, you know, predict how this one's going to go, because we have really, that was the first time it had ever been seen by anybody, you know, outside of the development team, and we did the interview with them, so it was kind of a coup for us to get, you know, the initial images up on the site. And like I say, Carlos, the developer, or the lead developer, has said that it really is basically, as I said earlier, an homage to games like Sin and Punishment and Space Harrier. So it's, again, it's probably a bit too early really to cast any judgment. And it kind of came out of the conversation we were having that, you know, a lot of games on the Dreamcast that have come out recently have been shmups, so there's not really been a lot that has taken advantage of the 3D hardware. And he kind of echoed my sentiments, and that's really kind of where this has come from, you know, to take independent gaming to a different angle, if you know what I mean, no pun intended, rather than, you know, having everything 2D, let's see what we can do in a 3D sense. Yeah, the other games that are coming out in the near future are from Hukas, which are games called Elansar and Philia, which are point-and-click games in the vein of Myst. They did appear on the Atari Jaguar in the recent past. Up, guys. yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to say, to be honest, about these two. They were quite well-received on the Jag. I'm guessing they'll be equally well-received on the Dreamcast, Gaz.
Yeah, I mean, point-and-click games have had their day, haven't they? I don't know. Has there been a resurgence?
I was going to say, I think it's nice that we get even more new content. I did ask if there's any new stuff that's in the Dreamcast version that isn't in the Jaguar versions, and the only thing that I can see is that it's got mouse support, which is, you know, nice for a point-and-click game. You know, people do like point-and-click games. They are nice to sit there and, you know...
Mm. Don't get me wrong, though. I mean, there's some... I mean, I personally like Beneath the Steel Sky. That was a fantastic game in its day. But then again, it's had its day, hasn't it?
Did you play Beneath the Steel Sky on the Dreamcast?
No, no.
Yeah, that's one of the games that was actually released on the Dreamcast via the whole Scum VM Dreamcast version thing.
Was it? How was it? Pretty
yeah,
good?
I played it on the Dreamcast. It runs fine on the Dreamcast. I think most of these Scum VM things do. I mean, you can play like Monkey Island and Sam and Max Hit the Road and all those games on the Dreamcast with that. I was very disappointed because like somebody was actually working on like the custom like adventure game studio program was going to be like it was going to be Dreamcast functionality was going to be added to that at one point in time. And that kind of got set by, and that made me sad because then people could make all these great, like, you know, AGS games and just put them out on the Dreamcast. And that would have been really cool. But because adventure games, like, you know, point click stuff, is there's certain people that do it like really well with the hooks and whatnot. And it just depends.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Beneath Steel Sky, it's Charles Cecil, isn't it? It's the broken sword guy, and he knows what he's doing with a point-and-click adventure. I mean, I think I agree with Gaz to a degree that I think, in terms of mainstream adoption, yes, I think the time for point-and-click has passed. However, for retro gamers, people who were there when the genre was big, and, you know, you're playing Monkey Island, you're playing Grim Fandango, you know, and you're playing the original Broken Swords, then getting to be able to replay that content again on a different console or have a different experience is good. And the thing with point and clicks as well is, I suppose, in terms of new content, is that they're very friendly in terms of hardware requirements. So they're almost an ideal genre for retro systems. Maybe it's a good thing that people are, bringing
some of that
stuff
over. It's a good point you make as well. I mean, Grim Fandango came out on the PS Vita and was it on the PS4 as well? Recently. Yeah, I mean, that was really popular. Has anybody played it?
Yes.
What were your thoughts on that, Xander?
I loved it. Like, I had seen one of my YouTube channels do a playthrough of the original, and as soon as it was on PS4 network, I just had to get it because
it was a game
really
that,
great.
I remember being quite intrigued by it back in the day when it came out, but I didn't have a PC good enough to actually play it, so I had to give that one a miss.
And I'll tell you another thing as well. One of the cool things they did with this remaster is that they've obviously, and they're doing this with a lot of point and clicks now, they're all introducing hint systems which basically tell you what to do. Because Grim Fandango was really, really good, but I can remember playing the original on PC, and oh my god, when you got stuck, you were stuck. This was before the internet. You couldn't just go tick, tick, tap, 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 tap. Oh, I've got the answer, I'll go and do it. You were stuck, and I can remember sitting in front of the screen for up to like an hour on end, making zero progress. And it was infuriating. So in some regards, it's good that they're sort of modernizing it a bit.
With these two games that are coming from Hucast, they were actually developed by Orion, who did Alice's Mum's Rescue. And I think they do lend heavily from the Myst games. And it is a case of if you are stuck, then you are stuck. You know, there's no hints. But I think with that kind of game, it does add a more cerebral kind of aspect to the game. You know, a lot of games do lead you by the hand quite a lot. You know, and this kind of thing makes you think and will reward you for your experimentation with the environments and stuff. From what I've seen of it, I've not actually played it on the Jag myself, but basically it's static backgrounds. You move a cursor around. If the cursor moves over an object that is interactable, then it changes into like a hand or something like that. So, I'm always interested in new stuff coming to the Dreamcast, and, you know, a lot of people have got, you know, things to say about Hucast for whatever reason, for, you know, reasons I'm not going to go into now, but, you know, you can't deny that they are passionate about bringing new things to the Dreamcast.
Just reel back up real quick to Retro Summers again. So the Amoeba game, and I was reading the description, it seemed like he was almost like taking a shot at, like, did anybody else feel he was taking a shot at, like, Snatcher?
That's a very good
when
point.
Discussing, like, visual novel games and whatnot?
Yes, now you say it. I didn't actually think that at the time, but now I think of what you just said.
Because everybody talks about Snatcher, and it's a great visual novel game. But then people sometimes who play it, they touch on the weird, like, Japanese weirdness that goes into this somewhat serious game. It's maybe not as serious. So he's specifically saying he's trying to make a Amoeba into a game where there's not like the blue hair and everything, and that's interesting.
Yeah, I love the art style because it's very kind of film noirish. You know, it's very, it's basically set in the now, contemporary, and I love the angle that it's going to be more of a European type game as well. No offense to anybody who's listening that's not in Europe, but there's definitely a gap in the market kind of experience, I find.
Yeah, it's a gruff Spanish old dude.
His name's Hugo. Oh,
that's kind of interesting.
He will solve the crime. Anyway, guys, we should move on. Caleb, you wanted to speak a little bit about something that's happened in the US involving one of your major chains?
Yes, GameStop is introducing Dreamcast and other retro games to their online store. Now, there, of course, are price point and availability issues. I've been told from different people that this has to do with their merger with ThinkGeek. So apparently, they're going to have ThinkGeek set up as their online retailer. And I just want to say something. I just want to just sum up my thoughts on this real quick. In eBay prices and GameStop prices, and people are saying, well, GameStop is selling it for less money. And with the way eBay is set up now, I actually think you have less issues buying stuff on eBay than you would on an online GameStop. And that's from personal experience. And I know you guys don't have GameStop, but I'm assuming you have similar stores in the UK. When GameStop originally stopped selling the Dreamcast stuff and they sold off all their inventory, all those games were missing the original cases. And every single game that I bought from GameStop during that time was really beat up. The Dreamcast games were just beat up. They were worn. And honestly, I've had so much better luck on eBay. And eBay prices are hugely bloated. It's the retro video game thing. The prices are way too high on eBay. So you're already playing high prices, and then GameStop will sell it for a little bit less. But, you know, I honestly don't know until I hear of a lot of people getting, like, really good quality games from them. Because there's no telling where this stock is coming from. I mean, is it coming from, like, huge cities like New York City, where they just have stockpiles and warehouses of stuff? Is it coming from acquisitions from other places? Like, and you know, companies like GameStop and ThinkGeek, you know, their bottom line is they don't really have to care that much. They can sell you stuff that's sold as good quality and it's really beat up. And they don't really care. There was that whole thing with the ThinkGeek, you know, 8 years back where they were selling new Dreamcasts, and it turned out like almost none of them were actually new. They were just in box. So it's, you know, and they knew they were in box and they sold them as new anyways because they knew they would be able to sell them. And so, you know, it's just all these people. If eBay is your only source for games and you can get a game for cheaper on GameStop, then the best of luck to you. That's all I'll say, because you're really rolling the dice as far as I'm concerned. So hopefully you'll get a good deal. I hope you do. But me, I'm not going to be buying anything from GameStop, because honestly, the sellers on eBay, if they try to pull the stuff that GameStop pulls, then they'll get horrible ratings and people, they won't be selling stuff. They won't be appearing on my list of stuff that I'm buying on eBay anymore. But GameStop's a big enough place. They can get away with a lot of this stuff. So, you know, hopefully I'm going to be kind of paying attention to all the online forums and whatnot and see if people are getting good deals and getting quality
one thing I've heard
games
is
from
that,
this new program.
Goes back a long way, a lot longer than recently, in that when GameStop learned of Xbox One's download-only policy, they were looking for other streams of revenue. And so they started as far back as maybe 2014, 13, like buying up retro games, inverted commas, so that if this actually happened and there were no more games to put on shelves, that they would have stuff to sell. And it's basically just about making money, you know, out of us, the gamers. Don't know if anybody else heard that.
I just wanted to say that another good source for games is Amazon. I mean, it's not
yes.
users necessarily, but there's
no smaller stores. You know, I mean, you can for a while there, you could get a copy of Gunlord on Amazon for a decent price because a smaller gaming store was selling it.
And it's not always a good option. It's not always available, but smaller mom and pop stores are always nice because they might be a little bit more expensive. But I've got one where I know the guy who runs the store, and I want to support his business.
Get a good game. What's the store called? Give him a shout out.
It's called One Up Games.
Fantastic. Okay. Let's change tack slightly. Something that I wanted to just quickly mention is something that's quite close to my heart. You might think I've got a bit of an obsession about this now. If you visit the Yard main site or the Facebook page, which I'm sure anybody listening to this does, it's my quest to find who plays the barber in the European Dreamcast adverts. If you didn't see my article, basically in the UK, and I'm pretty sure in the rest of Europe as well, there was an advert on TV and in cinemas around the time that the Dreamcast was launched where a load of conscript came into a barber's shop, which was inside a Foreign Legion fort, and players 1, 2, and 3 were the barbers, and they had a competition on who could shave the conscripts' heads the fastest. Now, the guy who played player 2, you know, he looks like a really grizzled old guy with a shaved head himself, tattoos on him. He was actually used in all of the promotional material for the Dreamcast, certainly in the UK. I'm not entirely sure about the rest of Europe, but definitely in the UK. And since the Dreamcast kind of died and went away, I can't find any information about who this guy is. And again, it has become a bit of an obsession, but I need to find out who he is. Is he an actor? You know, if he is, what else has he been in? Has he been in other things since or before? I just want to see him in a different context. I want to know who he is, what his name is. And ultimately, my main aim would be to like speak to the guy and, you know, maybe learn about the production of the advert, you know, just for, you know, preservation's sake. You know, people don't know these things and there's no information on the internet. So, yeah, that's just my little speech about wanting to find the guy who plays Barber in the European Dreamcast adverts. If you know who he is, if you know anything about the guy, please get in touch via the Facebook page or the main site. Somebody commented, incidentally, on the Facebook page, who actually used to work for Sega at the time of the Dreamcast, and said that the guy was actually a barber from Spain. That's why there's no information about him, like, on any of the sites or anything. So,
well, it's probably going to be a similar situation to the guy who did the Valve logo, where it's the guy from the back. Yeah. That's just some random dude who walked in. It's not an actor or anything like that. It's just some guy. And I'm assuming it might be a similar situation to that.
Yeah, it's so fascinating that this guy was so widely... the image is... I don't know about you guys in the US, but in the UK, the vast majority of Dreamcast games in the UK have a little pamphlet in the back of them that says, like, you know, upcoming games. And certainly up until maybe mid to late 2000, they had a pamphlet with this guy on them with his barber's shop, you know, and his clippers, you know, new releases. And so every Dreamcast owner would have seen him, but there's no information about who he is. Bizarre. Anyway, that's just my little quest that I'm currently embarking on. I've emailed Sega, I've emailed the advertising company that actually did the advert. The guy who actually directed the advert did the video for Robbie Williams' Angels, and he's gone on to become this massively famous music video director. He did a lot of like One Direction videos recently. So, yeah, if you know anything about who this barber is, please let me know. Otherwise, I will never sleep again. Anyway, yeah, let's nip that one in the bud, and we'll move on. Caleb, I'm going to come back to you again, if you don't mind. You said that there was a new display adapter coming out. Tell us about that.
Yes, the new Hanzo is coming out. If you want to find it, the easiest way is just to Google search Dreamcast Hanzo, H-A-N-Z-O. I'm sorry. H-A-N-Z-O.
Z-O, yeah.
That's how you do it, yeah. Sorry for confusing everybody. Anyways, so it's basically a VGA adapter, but it's got some amazing... I'm not going to get too into the tech because I'll just talk about it for a million years. But it's got an amazing, like, it's got some amazing stuff. You can switch over to, like, a SCART type thing for games that don't support the VGA output. You can also force some games to run off the VGA. And in addition, it also has a scan line.
Yeah, this
generator
is the thing that really interests me, because scan lines, especially on a big, you know, flat screen HDTV, just look fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people who love the fighting games on the old school, you know, displays, I mean, they don't... I mean, you talk to some of them, and, like, having the scan lines there is really just a way for them to, like, really up their game in terms of, like, you know, just, you know, getting the moves off and whatnot.
I very recently visited Rob, and Rob's got quite an impressive original Neo Geo collection. And what's the thing you've got, Rob? The TV box?
Yeah. I run it through the XRGB Mini, which is what I run all my consoles through, which is an absolutely amazing piece of kit. It costs quite a bit of money, but it's an upscaler, but it's specifically made for retro video game systems. And the things it can do are amazing, but one of the things it does is add in scan lines for you, and you can select different types of scan lines, the thickness of them, the amount of them. And Caleb hits the nail on the head. If you grew up in the arcades and you played those old-fashioned fighting games, then those presence of scan lines, there's something in your brain that when they're not there, it's wrong, you know. And I can completely believe pro guys it throwing their game off if there aren't the scan lines there. It's about authenticity. It's about making it look how it should look, essentially.
Yeah, and with the Hanzo too, you can actually hook it up and use it as a scan line generator. It's not just for the Dreamcast. Apparently, you can hook it up and on your computer and just generate scan lines with that as well.
Yeah,
but again, too. A lot of people are talking about, oh, it's $65 American. It's going to take a long time to ship because this is a small company. But you know, you can buy the one without the scan line generator for $45. And with that price point, I mean, I don't understand. And that's the Kuro one. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Kuro. And that one's coming out as well. So with that price point of like $65 or $45, I don't understand why anybody would want to use an inferior Chinese-made thing. It's just like you're paying an extra if you're going to use it a lot, an extra $20 for something that's going to have amazingly good build quality for the little LED thing alone. And like, you know, anyways, just look up Adam Korolik's videos on this if you wanted to learn more about.
Yes, Adam Korolik. Yes,
Korolik.
Indeed.
Friend of the show.
We'll have to get him back on at some point. Moving on. I don't know. Gaz, do you want to like introduce the next bit? Or just talk about the next bit about the competition results?
Oh, the competition. Exciting stuff, wasn't it? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we've got a winner, haven't we?
Yes,
James Steele. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Sir. Fantastic. Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we want to see. We want to see people getting creative.
Yeah, if you didn't see this, if you'd listened to this and you didn't see the final results, James created
a montage, isn't he? And it's of images and obviously what's special to him about the Dreamcast, which is what we want to know. We basically want to know what was special, what the Dreamcast means to you.
Yeah, so James created a passage of text where he spoke about the Dreamcast, and he substituted certain words for titles of Dreamcast games, and it's really clever. I mean, you can see it if you go on the Facebook page or you go on to the main Dreamcast Junkyard site. You'll see the montage artwork, if you want to call it that he created, and I was really impressed. I mean, we did have some other great entries. We had a Dreamcast song, which was brilliant, from Dave Moore. And not just that, we had loads of great entries, mainly text-based passages of people's memories of the Dreamcast, which was really cool for them to share them with us. But ultimately, it was James's creativity that won us over, really, in the end. So thank you to everybody who entered.
I just want to say real quick, it reminded me of the old-school ads you would see in the gaming magazines in the 90s. It's just really great to see something get as neat like that.
Which is probably where he got his inspiration from, but that's fine. He's wanted people to get creative, and creative they certainly got. But don't worry, folks. We still have more to give away. So it's because you haven't won this one doesn't
that's
mean you're not going to win again.
I was just going to say, James is now, as you probably saw, if you follow on Twitter or on Facebook, then I posted an image of James's thumbs up with his newly received Dreamcast collection vinyl. The next competition is not going to be anywhere near as, what's the word, taxing as this one. it will be, but not in that way. It won't be asking you to be creative. It's more asking about your knowledge of the Dreamcast. Details will be coming very, very soon. They might even be up on the site or on the Facebook page by the time this episode is live. And if they are, then please get entering. You know, please enter. We want you.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, be creative. I mean, if I could enter,
likewise. I mean, to be honest, I did think about actually maybe keeping one of these for myself, but then I thought, well, maybe Sega are keeping tabs on me, and looking if I actually give them away or not. If I just send out old LPs of like Queen or something, then it's not really going to be
Johnny H. Jazz.
That's it.
Kajagoogoo. Yeah. He's like, what? Was this on the Dreamcast?
Anyway, speaking of Facebook and Twitter and social media, etc., we have got some questions from our followers and likers on both forms of social media. So, gentlemen, if you don't mind, I'm going to jump right in and just basically throw it open for you guys and let you answer honestly and with your fantastic knowledge of the Dreamcast. Okay, the first one is from a friend of the Junkyard. PC Wizard 13, who asks, which games best utilized VMU Go?
I don't think any of them really, really utilized the VMU. Was the VMU ever utilized really well? For me, I literally only ever used it as a memory card. But what I did like was in fighting games, or even things like Virtua Tennis, just having little animations play, like on fighting games, it might be the character you'd selected and you get this nice little pixelated version of your character doing some basic animation. It's just sort of a second screen experience, but second screen experiences are always a little gimmicky, and I think with the VMU, that tended to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did try and use it other than a memory card. You put the battery in, and then 10 minutes later, it's run out of power. So, yeah, it kind of just cheap batteries, unfortunately.
I mean, because you could take, couldn't you take the VMU out and just like sort of read or your chow outside of the game?
Yeah, because it had a little D-pad, didn't it, and a couple of buttons. So you could essentially play it as a little game, but yeah.
All right, the two examples that I have, if you're talking about good usage in a game, I got to say Resident Evil Code Veronica is amazing. It had the little life thing there with the EKG. The little life meter. And then the other example I have is Pinata Quest for the Skies of Arcadia. That was a nice little extra game thing, which was a nice little gimmick for that game.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the only one I can remember really was in Power Stone, where you could play as Captain Falcon's sky shooter or something, where you could collect. Think, you know, it was just basically a very basic drawing of a plane, and you could like move it left and right, and then you could pick up power stones and then use them for something. I don't know. I was going to say, Caleb, the life meter in Code Veronica, isn't it in the other games as well, the Resident Evil games, the life meter?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the. Obviously, if for those who don't know the life meter, it's like a heartbeat thing, isn't it? And then it goes shallower and shallower as you're getting more and more hit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure as well that you can use it to change your tactics in a lot of sports games, certainly in the NFL games. But I'm thinking more of like UEFA Striker. I'm pretty sure you could change your formation as you're playing. So you could, on the fly change your formation. Yeah, interesting question. Now, to be honest, I don't ever really look at my pad when I'm playing, so I'm struggling to think of a time when I've actually really looked at the VMU as I'm playing a game.
I mean, in terms of Resident Evil, when your life goes, you know when you're getting hurt anyway, because your walking's laboured and you're dragging your leg when you're really critical. So, I mean, you don't really need the VMU for that.
Daytona use it as like a little, like above your car, like radar, so you see if other cars were near you. I seem to remember something like that. God, my knowledge of like VMU screens is so poor. I need to start looking at the VMU when I'm playing games.
the lamest one, but like the most is like the little chibi of Soul Calibur characters when you're playing Soul Calibur. And like you have the little chibi characters.
We're all just going to have to play a game each and just see what the VMU does, aren't we, and then come back next week.
I think the reason why I've not really got much of a knowledge of what the VMU was actually doing when I'm playing these games is because I use the, a lot of the time, the multi-cart ones, you know, where they've got a little button on the side. And then when you look down, all you can see is like the Joytech logo because there's no actual screen. It's just plastic, when you plug them in. Which leads me on to another thought that I had recently. Does anybody know if there's actually a third-party VMU that actually has a screen? Or are they all just like plastic coated things? Yeah.
Huh. Mm. That's a
I've
good
never
question.
Seen one.
Interesting. If anybody knows who's listening to this, then please let us know, because I was looking for one recently. I found one on eBay. I thought it might have had a screen, but on closer inspection, it was just a sticker made to look like an LCD screen. So, I don't know. Anyway, moving on to the next question. Okay. Matt Lamborn asks, this is quite topical, actually, considering the recent Shenmue news. How do you think Shenmue 3 news will affect the market for Shenmue 1 and 2 on Dreamcast? And the Dreamcast library in general, could it spark renewed interest in the console, surging prices?
Surging prices, yes.
Mic dropped. Rob, you mentioned that you've obviously picked up Shenmue again and then started playing it. It's probably going to pique a bit of interest in people who think, oh, I've not played that for a while, I think I'll have a go.
I think it will. I think there's a lot of people around the world right now who are either they're probably replaying Shenmue. There's probably a few who are playing it for the first time. But I've got to say, if you think, right, now's the time to buy Shenmue if you don't have it and play it, then just no.
Yeah.
Just don't. Like, I haven't seen, but I will guarantee you that the prices have absolutely exploded.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk on the Facebook and on the forums. On Facebook and on the forums about people who have never played Shenmue, but they've heard of Shenmue 3, so they've kind of gone, oh, wonder what this is, and then they've gone and done a Google on Shenmue. Oh, I might try and get involved in that. And then people who've got it for sale have thought, oh, now I've got an even bigger market for my game, so maybe I'll put the price up a little bit. So, yeah, I've certainly seen prices go up, not exponentially, but certainly quite a lot in the last week.
I think it's a massive gamble. If you haven't played Shenmue, and we know historically how much of a Marmite game that is, some people love it and some people absolutely hate it, and if you're going to go and pick up Shenmue 1 and 2, think, oh, I'll pick up those two games so I can then move into 3, you know, and I know what's going on, then you'll have to drop a lot of money, and you might drop a lot of money and then come away from it going, I hate this, this is appalling. And it's such, I'd say as well, if you haven't played Shenmue, it's such a time sink. It's not something you can just jump into, oh, I'll just play it for a week or something and I will have completed the first two games. Think again. You're going to be playing it for months. It will take you months to get through the first two games. Even if you consult the internet for like what you should do, basically, on every single day, it'll still take you a long time and it'll cost you a fortune. I mean, what's the cheapest you guys have seen?
The original normal version, 20-30 quid plus.
And what do you think it's? What do you think it is now?
I've not actually looked recently, but I can imagine it's gone up quite considerably. I mean, certainly with the thing we're forgetting here is that Shenmue 2 was a PAL only and Japan only release, certainly on the Dreamcast, not talking about the Xbox version. So I would imagine that has gone up quite considerably as demand has increased.
I've just typed Shenmue 2 into eBay and one of the first hits is 72 quid.
Wow.
And that has still got 2 hours left. It's an auction. There's been 21 bids, £72, and that's just Shenmue 2.
Is that the PAL version?
Yeah, that's the PAL version.
Flipping out.
Yeah, there's more buy it now, 80 quid.
But then you got to...
Xander gone.
But then you got to take into account the fact that you would pay like $60 for a good game. And it's a rare game too, so 72.
No, that's the thing though. Shenmue isn't a rare game.
No.
Because it's on eBay all the time. If it was rare, you'd get one here and you'd get one there. It's not a rare game. It's quite a common game.
What Xander means though is that you would pay sort of, you know, $60 or 60, £50 or whatever for a current release anyway. So, you know, you are getting a good game, in a sense, you know, essentially. So I think that's what you were saying.
Yeah, I looked up on the price charting website, and boy, yeah, people are trying to sell the original one for $68 US for the basic. So, yeah, it's definitely going to go up a little bit.
Well, all of us who have got the originals 1 and 2 have, we've sitting on a little nest egg there, I think.
Time to sell. Sell now.
I sold mine ages ago. I think I got about 80 quid for the pair, so, which I thought was a good deal at the time. So, oh, I don't know, because it wasn't a game that interested me. I played it for a little bit and just got bored of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think the key bit is what Gaz said, that if you're thinking of getting it, then that's fine. But it's not a rare game. Do not let anyone trick you into thinking that either of those two, specifically the first one, are rare. They are not rare, and there's just people trying to rip you off.
Yeah, totally. One thing I want to see in Shenmue 3 is, you know how you could go into arcades in like the other ones and play old Sega games?
Yeah,
I want to go into an arcade in Shenmue 3, and I want to play Crazy Taxi. Do you know what I mean? Or House of the Dead. That's come on. That's got to happen. The game is full of anachronisms. You've got a Sega Saturn under your TV. It's meant to be 1985. Do you know what I mean? It's like, come on. You can build on this. Yeah. We want Dreamcast games. I want a Dreamcast under my TV in Shenmue 3.
That'd be it.
Suzuki, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I want a Dreamcast in Shenmue 3. Is that simple?
Knowing how that campaign's going, that's going to be another stretch goal.
Quite. Okay, next question. Let me see what the next question is. Okay, Adam Lundgren says...
As in Dolph,
yeah, yeah. On Facebook, he says, do you have that one game that you love to play but still haven't completed? Maybe the last level is simply too hard, or you don't have the patience? Yes. I'll go first. The one game that I love but simply cannot complete is MDK2, because it's so goddamn hard. I love the game, but I'm stuck on the same level I've been stuck on since I first got the game in like 2004, whenever it was I got it.
Like we talked about Shenmue before, I wish I'd have given it a proper go, but as it was so time consuming and just never really got into it, and I was playing other stuff at the time. But yeah, if there's one game, if I had it, I'd probably give it another go now.
I don't know about like games that I haven't finished, but I always wish that I'd spent more time getting into the Civilization series. Mm. Because I was turned off those really early, and then it kept going, the franchise, and I just kept seeing the games review really, really well, and I always regretted that I didn't get into it.
I think he meant on the Dreamcast, to be honest, Rob.
Wasn't there a game, like a train simulation game where you could like
Railroad
on the Dreamcast?
Too. Yeah,
is that the one? Yeah, I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's quite relaxing, it's quite chilled out.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. Well, obviously, it's a never-ending game, isn't it, though? You can...
I think there is an end. I think it's like 30 years or something in-game. And then once you get to the end, I've never got past the first year, so I'm going bankrupt. So...
Well, yeah, it's one of them games, them same kind of games like Theme Park, and obviously we're talking about Theme Hospital and games like that. I quite like them kind of sim games.
Yeah. What about you, Caleb? Is there anything?
I would have to say Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, and also, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just playing the single player. I'm just, for some reason, with that particular fighting game, I'm not very good. And then, of course, Ikaruga.
Sheesh.
Which is a fun game, and I cannot, boy, for some reason, my brain just doesn't like that the changing from black to white, it's so difficult for me for some reason.
You got quick fingers for that one, definitely. One other one that I'm going to give an honourable mention to is Omicron the Nomad Soul, which is a game I spent a lot of time playing back when I first had it. And I think I got to like the third or fourth world, and I just stopped playing it. But I tried to play it again recently, and it's impenetrable. I can't see the text. It's too small on the screen. You know, I think it must be a sign of my age that my eyesight is failing, but I was reading it, I'm thinking, this is giving me a headache. I'm not sure I can be bothered.
Oh, so you went to the David Bowie part, and then I got to that part,
and then it was just... Oh, God, yeah, I tried to play it recently. What about you, Xander? Have you played anything that you wish you'd completed but haven't?
On the Dreamcast, I don't really have that many games that I haven't, to beat it, that I haven't beaten.
Well then, master gamer has arrived. No worries. Cool. Okay. Let's get on to the next question. Okay, this one's quite long, so I'm going to cut it down short, slightly. This is from Elliot Carduff. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, on Facebook. He says, okay, somebody has just bought a Dreamcast. What are the 5 to 10 games you would absolutely have at the beginning? This could be interpreted as asking what are the best games for the Dreamcast, but think about the many different genres on the system, perhaps current price of the games. For example, should they buy Daytona USA or Sega Rally 2 first for an arcade game? That's quite long-winded.
I mean, if price was no object, then you... I don't know. I'd probably go for Resident Evil 2, Crazy Taxi.
Actually, before you continue, guys, let's. I mean, there's 5 of us here. Let's choose 2 games each that people should most definitely play on the Dreamcast if they've never owned the Dreamcast before. Gaz, go.
Resident Evil 2 and Crazy Taxi.
Caleb.
I would, boy. I can't make up my mind. I'm gonna say that, you know, grab coat. Damn it. He already said Resident Evil, so I'll say Soul Calibur. Oh, I do? Okay, yeah. Resident Evil, Code Veronica. God.
Okay, excellent. Xander?
Toy Commander.
Oh, wow.
And interesting Pod choice. Racer.
Yeah, Pod Racer. I like Pod Racer. It's really good port for the Dreamcast as well, yeah. Rob?
Well, I'm not going to say Shenmue. Obviously Shenmue, but not Shenmue. Because it's now stupidly expensive to buy.
And we've just been talking about it anyway, so...
Jet Set Radio and Ikaruga.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool. Oh, God, pressure's on now. I would have to say...
Oh, I think I've changed my mind now. Oh, no.
You can't change your mind. It's final. I would say, okay, Metropolis Street Racer and...
Kudos to you.
Thank you. I got that, finally. Penny dropped. And Soul Calibur.
Oh, somebody just said Soul Calibur.
We've had Soul Calibur.
You can't say we can't repeat it.
Soul Calibur.
You're fired.
I know what your other one should be, Tom. Sonic Shuffle.
Ah, no. Yes. Yeah. Sonic Shuffle and MSR.
Done. No, I was going to. I've just bought Phantasy Star Online. What a game that was.
Yes. Good choice.
They've just bought the Dreamcast. It's not like back then when the servers were online. I mean, if you've bought a broadband adapter as well with it, but that wasn't included.
You can play without the... Well, yeah, I know, but it was still a great game.
Yeah, but you're only getting half the experience, aren't you, without the broadband adapter these days?
Honestly, if money is no object, then I'm going to start throwing out stuff like Samba de Amigo and Typing of the Dead. Because if you have enough money to get all the peripherals, I mean, I had those games at a video game tournament that I ran at the library. And, you know, it's just, Samba de Amigo is awesome. And I don't think the Wii version is as good, so.
No. No, there's some good choices there. Fantastic. I hope that answers your question, Elliot. Thank you for it. And the very last one, I can't really answer this one because I can't answer it, but my answer will be quite lame. The best way to un-region lock, if that's a word, a Dreamcast. My answer to this would be to use an Exploder cheat disc or a Utopia boot disc. Or
Utopia
like that.
Boots. Utopia yeah. Boots.
Utopia. Yeah, Utopia. Yeah.
I mean, you
which is the one that I've got?
Yeah, I mean, what's that? Sorry, guys.
The one that you gave me is, I mean, that works quite well. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can go very deep and like start unlocking BIOSes and all that kind of stuff. But to be honest, there's actually no point. You might as well just use a disc, a boot disc. It's this more simple way. Have you ever heard of Occam's Razor? It's like the most obvious and easy answer is obviously usually the right one. You could go really deep and go and start like, you know, unlocking BIOSes and changing all that kind of stuff. Or you could just use a CDR of Exploder and use that.
Or get lucky on eBay and just buy a Japanese Dreamcast.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, Rob, you've got an unlocked one anyway, haven't you? That's region free. So
yeah, I bought one with a mod chip. So I mean, obviously that is the best in terms of stress or hassle for you. Literally, I just stick whatever disc I want and it runs. But that obviously costs a bit of money, and you've got to find someone who can actually do it and sell them. But in terms of like speed and price, then it's a boot disc all the way. I mean, because changing the BIOS changer actually requires you to do some soldering. So
yeah. I was going
to
say what once again I'm going to use the term Occam's Razor because I like it and it makes me sound
Occam's Razor,
intelligent,
yeah.
Which is something I'm not. So yeah.
Utopia boot disc. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'd suggest.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, those are the questions that we had, and thank you very much to everybody who asked. I think we've been rambling on long enough now. We've been going for over an hour, so I think we might draw it to a close. Okay, it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. And you know, you can find us all on the Dreamcast Junkyard main site, which is www.dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, and on the Facebook page, facebook.com/ Dreamcast Junkyard. We can all be individually found on Twitter, and Rob, you are on Twitter at
R Nicholas J.
And Gaz, you're on Twitter at
Lost Ruin.
Xander, you are on Twitter at
was it Random Xander MEE?
Random Xander EE.
I think.
It is, yeah.
MEE, I think it is.
Oh, MEE, yeah. Random Xander MEE. And Caleb, you are on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
I am on Twitter, but I'm not going to tell anybody how to spell my name.
Fantastic. I'm on Twitter at Tom Leesy, or you can follow the Junkyard on Twitter at Sega Junkyard. One little thing I want to just make people aware of is that we are listed on a thing called the UK Podcast Directory, and they are going to be running a competition. Well, not a competition, but it's called the UK Podcast Awards. You can actually go to our listing on the UK Podcast Directory and click on the nominate button at the top of the page, which will give us a nomination for the UK Podcast Awards. We are obviously an international concern, but we are mainly based in the UK. It's edited here, and three of the team members live here. We have a member who lives in Australia, which is technically part of the UK, or it used to be. I'm not sure how you'll appreciate that, but... if you look at the Facebook page or the actual Dreamcast Junkyard main site, you will see links to our UK podcast directory page. And if you would be so kind to go onto that and give us a nomination so that we can attend this glitzy event in Manchester in October, that would be fantastic. I think it's October.
October? That's when Play Expo.
It might be September, actually, but it's around that time of year. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Please go and nominate us for the UK Podcast Awards. And thanks very much for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Stop this disc now.